Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop and apparently Maverick.
Hey, I am a Maverick, as a lot of people will say. And I'm also building hate, unfortunately.
Well, you're very, very straightforward. I'll give you that, Dan.
Well, we'll get to that here in a second. But before we do, please check out our website, keepithumane.com. Did you know this podcast and a few others are part of the Keep It Humane podcast network? So check that out, keepithumane.com/podcast network. You can see all the great stuff we got going on there. And don't forget to check out that social media stuff like Facebook, Keep It Humane. Or what is our Facebook again, Bishop?
Well, we're the Animal Control Report.
That's right. Yeah, I get carried away. The Animal Control Report on Instagram and on Facebook. You can find us there. I'm going to read something here in a second that you'll want to hear. You know, it's social media, so it's public. I feel like there's no need to be private about it, right? It's a public forum.
Keyboard warriors, though.
That person who I'm talking about has been a guest of this podcast a few times. Okay. So we'll get to that in a second. But before we do, did you listen to the last episode with Scott Giacopo of Best Friends?
I did.
And?
I think you had some very good points. I think you were very... You were a little hard on him, though.
Oh. See, I heard different. I heard I let him off the hook.
No. Because he doesn't have the say.
True. That's true.
In what happens. So I think you were a little bit hard on him. However, I do appreciate the fact that you explained very well that the issue you have is with the slogan and not with the program. Because that's one thing that I've always tried to emphasize for the show is that we don't have an issue with the program at all. It's those few little words.
It is, but the more I hear about some of the programs, the more I'm starting to maybe have an issue. And I didn't realize this. I think I've been so focused on the slogans that I didn't realize some of the things that they were doing. And we'll get to that here in a second. But before we do, I want to bring our guest in and introduce John Fisher. John's been a friend of the show for a while. We talk often offline. And I wanted to give him a chance to get on the podcast and share not only his experience this past week with Best Friends at the conference, but just his general. He's really actually, John, you're a real intriguing dude. I'm actually going to take my sunglasses off because I got to see all this. But just talk a little bit about your background and how you even got into this profession.
Okay, so it's been kind of a long journey for me. I had me a nice cush job in sales. Making good money, and I hated every second of it. So I made myself a deal that if I could find a job working with animals within a week, I would quit my job, and that's what I would go do.
Okay.
I saw an ad in the paper at a local primate sanctuary. It said they were looking for monkey caregivers. And I said, yep, that's what I want to do. So I applied. I didn't think I was going to get the job, but I did. I got it. I think I was hired on at $6.50 an hour. Nowhere near what I was making before. But I quit. I made a deal with myself and I stuck to it and I quit. Within a year and a half, I was the director of the sanctuary. I left the sanctuary when some sketchy stuff started happening. Some animal welfare issues, some misappropriation of funds started happening, and I kicked rocks, and then was asked to come back under the receivership of the Texas Attorney General after that facility was seized. So I did that for another 6 months, and then I worked in wildlife rehabilitation for another few years, mostly working with exotic animals, you know, your big cats, primates retired from military research, medical research, Hollywood, that kind of stuff. And then I wanted to move to Houston, be closer to my mom. She had a terminal diagnosis, so I wanted to be close. So I pulled some strings and I got a job at the Houston Zoo as a primate keeper. I worked with the chimpanzees a lot while I was there. I did that for 5 years. And then my partner and I were going to have a baby girl, and it was time to get a grown-up job. So she actually found the job and said, hey, the benefits are really, really good. It's one of them government jobs. Go, why don't you think about it? And I said, sure. So it was for a night humane officer, and I applied and I got it. So I ran the night operation by myself for probably, I don't know, almost a year. And then I took over shelter supervisor stuff about a year after that. And unfortunately, we lost our shelter manager suddenly a few years after that. And I applied, threw my hat in the ring, interviewed well, took over the operation. That was about 2.5 years ago. We started with about a 40% live release rate. I'm not going to use the no-kill slogan for this. I'm just going to say we started with about a 40 to 50% live release rate. Within a year, we hit 90, then the next year, 94, and then we're currently sitting at about 95.5 now. We cover
40. That's incredible, and that's what I think everybody wants to do.
Yeah, that's the goal. And it should be noted that we do not currently have and never have had a TNR program. We impounded feral cats. We did it just like every other old school animal control agency ever did. That being said, we're still doing that, but we haven't euthanized feral cats in, you know, I don't know, probably a year and a half, something like that.
Interesting.
Are you adopting them out as barn cats or?
We are. We actually, listen, I'm a big collaboration guy. So yeah. I think a phrase I'll probably use in this podcast is not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. There's a lot of bathwater, but there's some baby too. So we work with a lot of our agencies and I'll take in all of their friendly cats, or maybe they need me to take some long stay pitties. And I'll take them and they've got a really solid barn cat program. I was like, four rescues that we work with that do barn cats. So yeah, is that sustainable? Probably not. So we're constantly looking for new ways to do that. And we will kick off a pilot TNR program probably this year.
Awesome. Have you found any pushback on the TNR? Like, does the city do TNR outside of that?
No. So pushback's kind of a hard word. I mean, I try to remember that I'm a public servant first before I do anything else. So my positions on them are sort of irrelevant other than being a subject matter expert and being able to provide data, very data driven, and then let the city make their own decisions. So we brought in actually Best Friends to come in and give a presentation to our animal advisory committee on TNR. And then we had some other local rescues come in and talk to our council members. Council members decided it's something they wanted to try. So we highlighted some areas in town that we think is a good spot to try this pilot program. And staffing issues are probably the only reason that we haven't kicked that off yet, but we're raring to go. And we will have the best TNR program anywhere around. That's what the community decided. And we're gonna be the best at everything we do.
That's great.
That's awesome.
In your role, in talking about your current live release rate, is there a reason you don't use the term no kill?
I just feel like it's sort of disingenuous. I don't need that validation just myself. I'm not shooting for, once I hit 90%, did I stop? No, that's not. That's not how it works for me. And I think I'm the one that gets the phone calls every day. Hey, I want to bring in my dog. Are you a no-kill shelter? And sure. I educate them. I tell them what that means. Most of them don't want to listen through the conversation. They don't want to listen to all of it. I think it's reasonable to, for those that are using the no-kill designation, for them to expect us to explain that. I don't think the message is all the way there. I don't think it's clear to the majority of the public. So I just maintain that we have this is what our live release rate, this is what that means. And then you can attach your own labels to it.
At the end of the day, I think all of us want to see animals in homes,
right?
No animals suffer, right? And a safe and healthy community. I mean, if you think back to the history of this profession, it was formed on animal welfare and public safety and public health. Like that was the, the basis of it. And it's only 149 years old here in this country. Right. And so when you think about that aspect, it's still pretty young, and I applaud I applaud people that think outside the box. I'm a firm believer of we can't just sit here and do things the way we've always done it. When I say that, I think for me, the big thing is, and maybe I'm just not aligned with the times and I'm just digging my heels in to be difficult. My thing is that there's better language we could use that is not divisive, not as harsh and critical of other shelters. And as you heard on the podcast, which both of you listened to last week, there was that story out of Denver and actually one of my old agencies, and that's kind of how I found it, but where the rescue person who's a no-kill rescue group, right? So whether they're affiliated with larger organizations or not, they still take on that no-kill status. And the quote that they have in the newspaper or the online story was, "We really beat them down," right? Like the pride, yeah. the identifying, like, this is, you know, no kill versus municipal kill shelters. That's what needs to stop. And then I'm kind of hurt. I'll be honest. I'll be very vulnerable here in this segment. I'm hurt by the fact that, like, we've had people on the show from Best Friends. We've had Brent Tolner on twice, right, Bishop?
Yes, I believe so.
And I think he sees me now as like just this, you know, anti Best Friends person, which I don't think I am. And I'm going to outline it here in a second with a recent conversation we had on LinkedIn of, I'm just a strong proponent of finding a different slogan, right? Continue to practice as you want to continue in some aspects. I think, and Bishop, we'll get into this a little bit later, but like leaving dogs in the community versus impounding, et cetera. That has its own consequence, right? Yeah, I know. I see your face. But I want to set this up. And then, John, I also want to get, because you were here at this conference, I want to get your feedback too. So again, LinkedIn's, you know, it's a semi-public forum. Anybody can go there and see stuff. So basically, Brent had a good post and he and I are connected on LinkedIn. Last day of the Best Friends Conference. I love having an opportunity to share information about the work in our industry with others. Such great energy at the conference. Excited to see how these industry leaders take this energy and the life-saving programs they've learned about and apply it in their community. Let's go make ruckus. I could get behind that. Shit, I'll run through a brick wall for stuff like that. You know, I bring the ruckus, as the Wu-Tang says. So I asked, I said on his post, I said, "Can I come be part of a panel discussion next year? I would love help bring my perspective on how some of the language used is divisive in our community." And then I said, I listen to the Wu-Tang, so I'm always ready to bring the ruckus because that's true. So let me just pause there because there's a little more. Is that a bad idea to have somebody with differing opinions come to the conference?
So I'll give you my perspective on that. As someone that went to the conference, I can tell you that the passion that almost everyone at that conference was feeling was palatable. It was real. It was powerful. So I kind of can understand where they've built this massive juggernaut of life-saving efforts. And for a humane society or an SPCA or a rescue, I think some of their strategies are absolutely spot on. It's probably exactly how those organizations should run. But they're seeing the successes from there. I think what's missing is they're not seeing how their messaging affects municipal shelters.
I think
that's where the discussion's going to come from. And I'm not sure that a panel at a Best Friends conference is the place for that conversation, because honestly, there wasn't very much municipal representation there. In fact, I would say that was probably one of the things that was kind of a punch in the gut was sitting in on some of those classes and listening to animal control be called out. And, you know, we can't do a TNR program because the ACOs hate it. They'll never do it. The last speech given was this amazing story about how This shelter was going to kill a dog. And because, you know, this one person stepped in and saved the day, that shelter was suddenly fixed. I didn't feel like we were viewed as the boots on the ground. I don't feel like we were part of the community. And I started to think about that. And you know what? We're not. We're two separate entities, right? So for an animal control officer, we've got a lot of things that we have to take on. We have to take on public safety. We have to take on animal welfare. But they don't. All they have to do is focus on animal welfare. That's it.
Oh yeah, animals getting out of the shelter, or
that's it. They don't. They're not responsible for public safety. So, I think that there's a lot of value to getting best friends together with some subject matter experts in municipal sheltering and figuring out a better way. I heard some horror stories about dangerous dogs getting out of shelters that shouldn't have. I am a data-driven guy, and I'm not. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in their new data, and it's a shame. It's a real shame because they
left shelter animals to count, right?
Well, they left shelter animals and they started their own. And I can tell you that there's some small differences in what I reported for our shelter versus what they're reporting for our shelter. So I don't know. There's some stuff that I need some accurate data. Our national organizations have left us behind. They're not doing that. So I don't know where that true data is going to come from, but to answer your question, I don't think that at a best friends conference is probably going to carry a lot of weight because you'll probably get booed out every time you try to talk. These are organizations. I hear you have the conversation, yeah. But I don't know that that's the spot for it.
I hear what you're saying. And for me, the reason I bring it up is because I want that perspective heard. And right. I want that other side, especially the ones that you just encapsulated there, like to hear our viewpoint, because I'm not just speaking for myself. And Bishop, I'd love to get your feedback on that.
So what I'm hearing is that we need to continue to fight harder to no longer be segregated.
Yeah. I mean,
like there's this continued segregation of animal control, the dog catcher, and warm and fuzzy, I'm going to save everything.
And that's why I'm so vocal in some aspects. And I want to finish this post because I think it's important. And Bishop, I want your honest feedback. I don't want you to sugarcoat it. And you never do, so I'm not worried about it. So after my comment, can I come be a part of the panel discussion? Brent writes back, I guess my recommendation is that if you want to spend substantial amount of airtime on your own platform criticizing an organization, you probably shouldn't expect that they would be excited to give you their platform to do it as well. And I said, I don't think that's fair to say I spent substantial amount of airtime criticizing best friends. In fact, have you listened to the last episode with Scott? It was released last week. What is the best way to have a different opinion on a slogan without making it seem like I'm being critical? Just because I disagree shouldn't put me in the doghouse of your organization. In fact, one of the best ways to break down these barriers is to have a discussion. I speak for many that have much more critical takes on best friends. I'm literally trying to help be an intermediary so we can find a way to bridge this gap. By you saying what you said above, it feels like best friends want to operate with autonomy, and anyone with differing view is unwelcome. And then I said, in fact, I was asked by a member of your org if I could help connect them with a local animal control agency. This is pretty recent, by the way, because they were trying to get in their animal control group for best friends is having a hard time. I messaged people with that organization and they were completely closed off. I then saw some of those people from that same organization and tried to have a discussion in person because this was at a recent training, and they didn't want to hear it. They were like, absolutely not. They were part of this organization a few years ago. We don't want them back. And I said, it was hard to have that conversation because I know deep down you're doing some good work. I went to bat for you and they still slammed the door in my face twice. So please reconsider my pitch. I think it would be extremely valuable to all involved. So Bishop, where are you at on that?
I would say we have talked about it. We've talked about it a lot. You and I both have very strong opinions about the slogan and we have said over and over that that is the issue. So for him to say that we are slamming him on our platform, I think is incredibly unfair of him. And we have asked them repeatedly to continue to come back and talk to us, to send us the CEOs that actually have the means to change things, to have those conversations. I think that that was unfair. I think you worded it very well and were professional in it. So it would be nice to see them continue to have a professional conversation with us.
But I'm not in line with their slogan. And so as John, you were putting it earlier, people that were at the conference, it probably seemed that they were there because they support and they're not going to push back on what they're doing.
Yes. So I'm still unpacking the whole experience. I'm still processing a lot of it. So I'm going to asterisk this with allowing me to come back and maybe have different thoughts on things later.
Okay. Of course, you're always welcome.
Absolutely.
But I'm today when I woke up, I began to have a different, they feel like they've done a lot of good work. And I think we can all agree that they have. They've certainly put animal welfare front and center in a lot of places where it wasn't before. We don't always agree with their strategies. I certainly don't. I'm not interested in doing any limited service or anything like that, but that's where they have, that slogan has gotten them the funding to be able to do all of these things. So, and honestly, I think it's such a juggernaut that I think that ship has sailed. I think that the train is barreling down the tracks, and I don't think we can stop it. But what we can do is in our industry, and we have to understand that our industry is separate than their industry. I think COVID blurred the lines between who was responsible for what. A lot of places closed their doors during COVID appropriately, right? Keeping our people safe, keeping the public safe. But that created a gap, that created an opportunity for someone else to step in and do what we should be doing. And those reins have never been released. So we've got to go back to doing our job. And one of the best sessions that I had at Best Friends was actually, I think her name was Ellen Jefferson with Haas, which a lot of people would probably be shocked to hear me have anything positive to say about Haas. Becky Best and Cole Wakefield. And then I don't remember the other panelist's name. She was with One Tail at a Time Rescue. And it was all about the gap, you know, like what is the roles of rescues and animal welfare organizations? And it should be to support municipal shelters. And that was their position. So that session was really good. I was glad to hear all that stuff, some really good stuff happening. And I really wish that we could get back to doing that. But there's still some Neanderthal approaches to animal control as well. So we've got to fix those in our industry if we're going to get help from them.
What I worry about here is if we continue on being segregated, that the only way we're going to get results, because in my opinion, we should all be working together. And here's the reason. I understand that a municipal agency is going to run different than a rescue, but the municipal agency needs the rescue that once the animals are secure, they're healthy and they're ready to go and they can't adopt them out. Well, now we need the rescues and we need to be working together. And we have so many different organizations right now. We've got NACA, we've got Code 3, we've got the ASPCA, HSUS,
LETI.
Best Friends, LETI. We have all of these different organizations that have very similar opinions, all of them pretty much the same goals. And yet here we are working against each other. We could be using the funds together. And I worry that to actually get some of these, you know, okay, Dan has started his campaign, if you will, on Facebook of the smart sheltering. If we want to get something like that out there, we're going to have to create an entirely new program, because I don't know that any of them are going to jump in on it. And that's frustrating to me. Why are we reinventing the wheel when there are so many fucking wheels out there right now?
Yeah.
We should be working together.
And I'm sure they might tell you differently, but if you look at socially conscious sheltering, the whole like conception of that slogan and process, if you will, or would you, what were you just calling it, Bishop? You had a name for it that I blanked on. You like just like creating a new program. That's what it was, program. Yeah. So socially conscious sheltering, you know, it was established in Colorado around the same time when No Kill Pueblo, so a county in Colorado, won the rights. Like they actually got the community voted for No Kill Pueblo. Like they basically, it passed. It passed a freaking bill.
That's the thing, yeah.
And I want to go to there and take a survey and find out what that means to them.
Well, exactly. And that's the whole point of like my rebuttal on the slogan and how it's so divisive, because what happened is some No Kill group went in there and they completely failed so bad that they literally got charged. Like the state went in there and like charged them for violations of like the proper, you know, animal housing codes, those type of things. I even think there was some cruelty going on. Well, there was cruelty going on, but I think they also got cited, if I'm not mistaken. And you can look it up, just Google a No Kill Pueblo. It was like 2019 or 20. It was pretty recent.
Yeah.
But it failed miserably. And so socially conscious sheltering kind of was born to help, I would say, like, balance out, like, okay, this is...
They renamed it.
Yeah, it was like, hey, well...
We went bankrupt, so we're going to rename it.
No. It had nothing to do with that group. It was the good leaders in Colorado trying to figure out a way to balance out No Kill. I wish I was on that panel, because maybe SMART would have been started 3 years ago instead of... Socially conscious sheltering is a lot to say, right? And then, you know, SMART, granted, it's a lot to say when you break down the acronym, but it just sounds better, right? Like, hey, I'm a SMART shelter. Okay, cool. What does that mean? Bang, done. Keep it moving. So in the aspects of like programs and organizations, Bishop, I finished a traitor to his species. I don't know how far you got on that. I know it's a long book. Yep.
Not as far as I would like.
And the reason I bring that book up, I love it. I mean, I could read it again tomorrow. I really recommend anybody to read it. And I feel like we're in a similar situation as Henry Berg and some of them back in the day were. But when you think about animal control in its own self, Henry Berg wanted it to be part of the ASPCA. He wanted to be able to hire animal control officers to do the public safety, public health aspect of it. Right, because the ASPCA was really formed off of livestock, equine, etc., like all that stuff. But they needed animal control, and he went to bat for it, and he was shot down. And so the municipal government hired dog catchers, right, because they could hire them cheaper and collect a bounty and just keep it regulatory in that way. But he wanted it. He wanted it to be part of that. And so for a very long time, it was split. You had the ASPCA, Humane Societies, doing their one thing, and then you had the angry dog catchers, which really helped form the stereotype that we have today. I always say this wasn't some genius at Disney creatively coming up with the dog catcher in the net. That was a reflection of the product we put out there, right? Like there's no question about that.
Sure.
And so here we are today, 149 years later, where we have an organization. And I talked to Nick when we saw Nick at Taka, you were with us. I mean, we had a long conversation and I gave him the blueprint. I'm like, hey, have best friends, they have the money, have them create a spinoff that is just focused on animal control, like, and lose that moniker, lose the name, and still do the work that you want. If it's about the work, you don't need slogans. It's the work, right? But they know, and John, you mentioned this earlier, they know that as a marketing slogan, I mean, it's great. It's genius.
Yeah. I know I've talked to a lot of municipal managers and municipal employees, and listen, the minute you bring up the word no kill, they just roll their eyes, shut down. And I can tell you that's been my experience with the majority of municipal shelters that I've dealt with. That does not mean that we're not going to accept some help. And listen, my South Central best friends region, the folks that come into my shelter and help us with events or, you know, I'm always nervous with the term marketing dogs, but they come in and they help us out. They're fantastic people. So there's part of the baby, part of the problem. But we just, I just don't know that's ever going to go away. So as an industry, as the municipal animal services industry, we have to react differently. So someone calls me and says, "Hey, are you a no-kill shelter?" I'm not going to say, "Well, the definition of no-kill is a 90%." That's not what I'm going to say. I'm not. I'm going to say, "Listen, here's our live release rate. This is what that means. Have I euthanized animals for space? Yes. Have I had to put animals down for medical? Yes." I'm going to have those transparent conversations with them. I just don't need the no-kill moniker. I just wish there was a place for us at the table more with Best Friends, because I think that we could bring a lot of value to their organization. We can give them strategies to sort of accomplish the same goals that don't involve limiting service. And I'm not sure that they don't need us. They don't need us.
Imagine, let me just throw this out for perspective. Imagine if there was, boy, this is going to stir some shit up.
Dan, come on. You've already stirred it.
Imagine if it was like, "Hey, we're no site animal control." I mean, they kind of do that in a state where there's a famous barbecue joint or a couple of those. But like, no, we're no site animal control. "Hey, are y'all no site?" "Well, yeah, except for 10%, because those 10% of people are bad and they commit animal cruelty. But we're no site." "But you said you're no site." Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's misleading. That's the whole, that's it. It's we can sit on that. It's misleading. I want to go back a little bit to the conference, and thanks for kind of reporting back for that.
Yeah.
You and I, you know, we talked quite a bit over the weekend, and I learned a lot, and it opened my eyes to the limited intake things that they're trying to do. And again, Scott and I talked about this last week, where I didn't ask permission. I was in a class in Detroit or Michigan, and I was like, "You know what? Who's heard of Best Friends?" And it was kind of that grumble, because I'm teaching all municipal ACOs, right? It's all. So I'm trying to big them up. I'm trying to give them credit. I'm like, "How many of y'all got scanners?" And people raised their hands. And I was like, "Legit, how many do not have a scanner? Legit." And there were six people. They came after class. I got their information. I sent Scott an email and said, "Hey, I heard you do this in your class because you told me you do this in your class. So I did this in my class. Can you help these people out?" And they did. And I appreciate that. My point of bringing that up is, what you were saying, John, as far as those municipalities aren't represented where you at Best, they weren't there.
I actually, so there's an app that comes with the conference, and I typed in animal services and I typed in animal control, and we were told that the attendance was record breaking, and I have no doubt about it. There was a plethora of people, but there was, you know, you could scroll twice and be through all the animal control attendees.
Was it welcoming to them when they were there?
So I know Brent. I've had some conversations with Brent. He was incredibly welcoming. He sought me out. We had a couple of conversations while I was there. My local group was, but I can tell you, sitting in the classes and listening to animal control being labeled as, you know, a barrier to no kill, that stung. I've worked really, really hard. I've changed trajectories of careers, positive and negative, chasing this magical number. Beat the snot out of staff to get them to hit this number. And I can assure you, at least my agency is not the problem. And I don't believe our industry is. And I will go back to your microchip scanner. And I think this is part of what the problem is. You know, I know we're all busy, but any animal control officer could contact these microchip companies, these microchip scanner companies, and say, hey, listen, I've got a shelter down the way that doesn't have any shelters. They will send them to them. They will give them to them. They now have a lifelong customer. We don't need best friends in that area either. There's areas that we do. Listen, you know, it's not a big secret that I removed my agency from NACA. I don't participate in NACA anymore. I don't believe that they have our best interest at heart. I think that animal control and our agents are secondary to best friends, Haas, UC Corret, Davis Corret, NKE. They're second to all of those movements. So I'm not with them anywhere. But listen, Josh Fisher's presentation on customer service, fantastic. Kristen Hassan's, well, her presentation, I didn't get a lot from. There were some really poignant points on compassion fatigue that were impressive. So I'm not saying that they don't bring some value, but we have to be careful who we're leaning on and when.
Bishop, I see you thinking over there.
I'm just very frustrated. I'm very frustrated that we have come this far in 140 years and still having to have discussions like this where we're like, okay, are we actually putting quality training out there? And are the people that are supposed to be there backing us, are they actually?
Well, let me ask you, Bishop, what for just animal control, boots on the ground patrol, and same with you, this question, we'll get to you on this question too, John, is like boots on the ground, animal control, name your top five classes that you would want to see. Where should training be focused? I'm putting you on the spot, and I'm giving John more time to think about it. So
verbal judo.
Yep.
General animal cares and like animal well-being.
Okay.
I want to say some kind of like a security, a personal safety.
Okay.
Report writing. And
for
court prep.
John, what are your five?
My first one, and the one that is absolutely most important for me, given my last year, is the general wellness courses for our officers, how to react to our industry. I have lost some amazing people that went on to be jailers and police dispatchers because it's not as stressful as being an animal control officer. Let that sink in for a minute. Yeah. So that, obviously you can't do this gig without your basic ACO. So I think there's just those basic, you know, how to use a control pole, how to use your equipment. And then officer safety has to be right there at the top for me. I really enjoy the de-escalation courses. And one that I don't think we do enough of is our implicit bias courses.
That's smart. I think, but we're being fed what you were saying from not, and we're not singling out the conference you were just at. It has nothing to do with that. But the majority of trainings that you're seeing, right, it's focused on RTO in the field or right, like how to come up with resources. And I'm all for these things. Like instead of like, I would rather fix a fence than write a ticket. I teach that. Like I share that in class.
Watch your video. Right? Yeah. So, and listen, as someone, look, I got a 41% RTO rate, right? Okay. So I'm all about, they don't come home until we've knocked on some doors. We've done some internet searches. We've called mamas and daddies. We've done everything. you're right. The training that at Best Friends wasn't any of that, but I sort of had an epiphany, and this has been really like, there's not a lot else I'm talking about. Not a lot else I'm thinking about. My better half has been home for probably about 4 or 5 hours, and I probably have said, you know, 3 or 4 words, because this is what is consuming me right now. And I had an epiphany earlier. Conference wasn't for me. Mm. It's not for me. It's not for our industry. We have to stop caring. What we have to fight back on is, and I use the word fight, like respectfully and, but firmly, is when it starts to affect our industry, when it starts to affect the emotional and mental wellness, which contributes to the financial and physical wellness of our teams. When those kinds of policies start affecting us, then we have to have a pushback. And frankly, our national organization should be leading that charge, but they're not. So I'm trying to
focus. I mean, they're part board members, or the board members are part of it. Yeah. So
yeah.
What you said though, you lost people because of the stress of this job, right? When I brought up that quote earlier from the case in Denver, we really beat them down, yep. Right? It's an us versus them scenario. And I've always been somebody that will not take the undervalue of our profession lightly. I will always fight back. So if Brent thinks that I spend the majority of our time here on this podcast or our platform talking shit on Best Friends, he's naive. I will say that. Brent, we're friends on Facebook, dude, unless he deleted me, but I don't think he did because he's a nice guy. Like, you're naive to think that that's what we do. Listen to our 188th episode. There may be 3 or 4 that's Best Friends related, right? So it's not fair. What I will say is the goal is to bring content forward to help better the people in this industry. It's interesting because we actually, Bishop and I recorded an episode that'll air after this, that we wanted to just focus on the positive because we spend so much time focusing on the negative because this job is difficult. And so we spent a whole 45 minutes or whatever talking about positive stuff, trying to have those conversations because it starts there. You think about what the Humane Educators of Texas are doing with their peer support group and stuff like that. Like, they're focused on trying to bring awareness in that aspect. And I think what's lost in the shuffle of all this is, well, we're getting all this money to help our organization. Well, how are we helping the animals from that? And how are we helping our profession? I know they have a small unit focused on the field services aspect. You know, Scott, who was just on, Scott Giacopo, listened to episode 187. He was just on. Like, he talked about some of the programs that they do, the life-saving things that they try. But it's not enough, in my opinion. It's not enough. And so until they're willing to really embrace the, like, it's a community. So if they want to embrace the community and stop looking at us as the problem, embrace it and help us together bring more value to the animals and the people in the community.
Yeah, I'm reminded of that phrase that, you know, if you can't help, at least don't do harm, or something along those lines. And honestly, it's not Best Friend's job to fix our stray animal populations in our areas. They can certainly support us, and I don't care how much money they make. They can pay themselves $1 million each. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. As long as you're not hurting me. And I feel like the strategies, I know for a fact that the strategies of limited service, and I'm not going to call it managed intake is what you do for owner surrenders. Limited service is what you do for stray animals. At least here in Texas, it's crazy, man. It's insane to drive around these areas and see
all the dogs just running at large.
And then you call your major municipal shelter and you can't get an appointment to drop off strays that you found. And so during COVID, these animals were left to breed all over the streets. And then we were surprised that there was these massive numbers of, there was 2 years that populations went unchecked.
Yeah.
Nobody had an exit strategy. We had a reaction, and then nobody had at least nobody that I heard of had an exit strategy, how to come back and how are we going to deal with the problems that we left on the street. And I guess it comes down to, you know, I feel like most of Best Friends feels like pets are better off on the street than they are in the shelter because they're at the risk of euthanasia. And I disagree. I feel like the safest place, if it's not going to be in a home for a dog, is in my shelter.
Well, I hope to see you at TACA 2023 in San Marcos. I have a whole class dedicated to the consequences of what we're doing and really thinking about succession planning. And I know, Bishop, you have a class that you're working on. You want to talk about that really quick?
It's about the acceptance of, you know what, sometimes we have to euthanize and that's okay, and kind of working through your feelings. It's called good death versus stressed life.
And those are the things that we need to tackle. I will say, you know, and I haven't looked at the books of these giant organizations, but is Best Friends, because they're such a proponent of no kill. And part of this problem that we have is not just spay and neuter services, but lack of affordable vet care, period, across the board, right? So a person's inability to obtain veterinary care could lead to them surrendering an animal, right? Obviously, the spay and neuter is a big part of that. So finding affordable spay and neuter services. If they're sitting on $107 million, I'm just curious, how many scholarships for veterinarians do y'all have? Or how many vouchers, how much money are you willing to put up in these communities that have vet deserts, right? And I know they're probably doing a little bit of it. I'm sure they are. Yeah. But we need more of that. If y'all really want to get involved, like, there's your answer, is start there. Start a scholarship program. If as we know, I mean, Bishop, you know, the vet industry is hurting big time.
Killing
it. They don't have enough. So if you want to get to the actual, in my opinion, the core of some of these, I would say just some of these embedded issues we have in our community, like, it's not just about limited intake or minimized intake. It's about providing the resources that people need in their community so they don't even give up their dog, right? Or their cat or whatever it else may be. So
yeah, Brent actually, I listened to his session, and he spoke to some of that in his session. And again, the data that they collected, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know the sources of that data, but he was mentioning that 39 of the shelters in this one particular area were still not no kill. And the data showed that these were underserved and underrepresented communities. And that's why they weren't able to hit no kill. But these are the same communities that are trying to get help with stray animals that they found too. I'm not seeing packs of stray dogs, you know, run around in Beverly Hills. I'm seeing them run around in low to middle income communities.
Exactly.
They're not represented. And then think that the Best Friend's strengths is their marketing and their fundraising and the amazing, they don't have to take any of their existing money at all. Mm-hmm. But just to leverage that skill set that they clearly have could be really impactful. And honestly, I mean, I'm working with a group that's doing some lobbying in the Sacramento area, and, you know, we're trying to get some small wins. And I think the biggest thing we have to legislate spay and neuter. We have to. I know it's touchy, and people, we get tons of pushback and all this other stuff.
I don't know why.
It's insane that it's not. But that's where our most successes are going to come from. If we can legislate, now listen, that's probably not going to happen in Texas anytime soon.
Not in Texas.
No, but we could. That's where the conversation has to start. You know, we are reacting to a problem that we didn't create and that we don't have any influence in solving. We, as municipal shelters, can't go spay and neuter all the animals that need to be spayed and voluntary or not. So I think that the lines of responsibility have become blurred. Whether that was intentional or not is still up for debate. But yeah, so some of the sessions were great. Others ones weren't, you know, the bringing in a cat through the clinic door and spay and neutering it versus bringing it through the front door so that you don't have to count it as an intake was mm-hmm. part of my session that I went to. And that was weird to hear a national organization suggesting that that was a good strategy.
Can you fudge the numbers essentially?
Right. And the embedded program, that's a topic for a whole nother time. And I don't know if there's a lot of value to having it, but it's not a successful program. Look at El Paso, look at LA, look at Palm Valley, look at Pima, Arizona, look at Miami-Dade County. None of these, they're not successful, because eventually the community screams that you're leaving animals on the street. So absolutely. there's a lot of bathwater that isn't helpful to municipal shelters. But the truth is, there's other shelters like mine, there's other agencies like mine that are doing it without those things. So come have a conversation with us. And then we need to be initiating that change. They're like, hey, how did you do that? Here's what I did. It's most often not a poor strategy that leads to the failure. It's almost always a lack of resources. So that's where but we can't lobby for our own resources. Oftentimes we can't even defend ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody, some kind of grassroots effort. And if there was only this massive organization that started with a grassroots effort that could help us gather those resources and defend us when we need defending. And I think Best Friends could be that if we could just get past this blaming animal services stuff.
Agreed. And John, this 50 minutes went super fast.
And
I'll be shocked if anybody from Best Friends listened to this whole thing, because if they did, I want y'all to reach out. A couple reasons. Come back on the program and let's just have a discussion. Okay. Secondarily, help us with these things. As John said, NACA is not doing it, right? They're doing a whole different, they're on a whole different thing, right? We need to figure out a way to bridge that gap, right? Figure out a way to help our community through creative measures and be inclusive, right? Being inclusive starts with that language. I can't say this enough, and people will probably say, well, that's a stretch. It is 2023 where Major League Football teams, Major League Baseball teams change their names because of public pressure. You don't want me to go ahead and start a freaking, what are those things called where you get
petition?
Yeah, I'll go get if I got to go get signatures, I'll go get signatures. Like, if that's what really needs to happen to show that this no-kill movement doesn't work and y'all need to change the slogan. I showed it last week, I'm sure, and I talked about it again. They have a slogan called No More Homeless Pets. Like, focus on that and I'm good, right? Yeah, focus on that and mean that, right? And don't get tied into this marketing ploy, because that's at the end of the day, that's what it is. And I appreciate it because it gives them the funding to do some of the things that they do. But until they really include municipal work, animal control work, and the hard work that it really is, like, I don't know, like, come out and do some ride-alongs in Houston, or come out and do some ride-alongs in Los Angeles, South Central. Come do some ride-alongs in Cleveland, Ohio. Let me see you come to Cleveland, Ohio and do some ride-alongs, right, Best Friends? Like, and then talk your noise, right? Come see the dog that is hung from a tree and then its head severed off, and then talk to that officer about how, well, I mean, you know, our vision is just no-kill, right, or whatever it may be. So until you're ready to have those hard discussions with these people that literally go through some war type environments, right? Like, they're literally out there putting their life at risk to help animals. And these people are sitting at home, probably working from home, right, with their fluffy dog or cat next to them, not dealing with the day-to-day struggle. And so that's the part of it that I hope that they understand is this, what you hear from me, this passion that I have, this maybe a little bit of anger, is because we're always, in my opinion, we're always like looked at as the villain, the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And here we are again, not getting the support that I feel like we deserve. And then, I get bad mouthed because I have an opinion about it, right? I'm trying to help. That's my goal. I want to help this whole thing. I'll get on board. I even talked about how I've tried to help their own people have a conversation with an agency that is like, nope, don't want to deal with them anymore. I did that. And it still gets shot down. So yeah. I just hope that this resonates. I hope that some of our listeners are willing to sign a petition, hit it up at keepithumane.com. But in all seriousness, I'm probably not going to go there at this point, but I just want people to understand that, like, we just want to help. We want to help people and we want to help animals. That's it.
That's it. Facts.
I think that's what we all want. That's what we're all here for.
That's what I want to do. But I can tell you that this year is going to be way more focused on the people. We're going to take care of our folks much better than we did the last 2 years. And we're still going to shoot for saving as many as we can. And we're going to be proud of that effort, however the numbers end up at the end of the year.
Well, you're always welcome to come back and talk about any of the programs that you're working on, John. If you need support from just the community of animal control officers or whoever's listening to this show, because it's not just for you, it's for everybody. It's for that person that's like, what does no-kill mean? And they were like, oh, wow, I didn't know that there was this whole opposite side of it. Like, we thought it was just great. So there's that aspect too. Bishop, you were relatively quiet, so I want to give you the floor before we go. Where you at?
I keep coming back to, can't we just all get along? and I mean that like as a totality.
Yeah.
I am constantly also trying to educate people about, you know, the term no kill. Mm. I also didn't realize actually until just recently how many people in our profession actually did not like the term. It's been coming out on Facebook a lot.
Yeah, because I posted the sport shelter stuff and people were like, oh, yeah, like you're never going to win because best friends is way too big and the no-kill slogan just absorbs everything, but we hate it too.
Yeah, so I was very surprised by that. But they're also, I mean, they're hurting themselves by not taking that into consideration, I think. And by hurting themselves, they're hurting the animals that they could be saving. I think we all need to do what we can out there, support our individual areas, educate our individual areas. Like John said, you know, working towards the keeping ourselves mentally okay, because we do see a lot of crap. And I feel like this no kill thing adds to it so much.
Well, because what do people say, John? You said you fielded phone calls every day. Are you a no-kill shelter? Are you a no-kill shelter? When I had that discussion or tried to have that discussion with Brent, he's like, it's not the community. It's not the people. It's only animal control or people in our industry that don't get it. And it's like, that's so naive, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, I was just having this conversation with my 78-year-old dad. And he was like, it means you don't put anything down, right? And I was like,
phew. Yep. I just had it with an 18-year-old who's told me his mom surrendered specifically to the no-kill shelter versus our local humane
because system. Let's end it on this. What that does is, oh, wait, you're no-kill, right? It makes it like, oh, shit. Like, no, because we have standards and we got to make sure that we're putting a safe and healthy animal back in the community. Otherwise, yeah, we're the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's how it feels.
No, you're spot on, and it is the community. They don't know what it means, and no, I don't think any amount of education is ever going to get them to know what it means. That's not what their objective is to learn what no kill is when they're bringing an animal to the shelter. It's either to, you know, remove a burden from themselves via the animal or do the right thing via surrendering an animal to the shelter. Both of those people we have to help, and they're not really interested in what the true definition of no-kill. They just need that conscious that piece on their conscience that says, I'm at a no-kill shelter.
And I'm going to take that one step further. That same mentality and I believe is the same mentality that happens within that organization, right? When they go to bed at night, they're like, well, we're still doing greater good. Like, we're still helping shelters receive that 90% live release rate. So the one that has negative six or whatever Scott brought up, I don't know how that's even possible. Like, like we're still doing the work over here. So it helps me sleep at night versus knowing that it's causing all these other issues on the back end. So John, I'd love to keep you on for another hour and just continue to have this conversation. I think, you know, the next few episodes will probably be away from this, but if Best Friends wants to sneak in, we're pretty booked up through November, but they can drop a line and we'll squeeze them on just like we squeezed you in. Squaz is not a word.
And there's another word.
Anything that, got a whiteboard going.
Anything that we didn't chat about that you wanted to make sure our listeners heard, or just anything you wanted to say before we wrap it up?
Sure. Just two quick things. One is I really appreciate the platform. Like, we can't compete with the Best Friends platform. We can't compete. We can't compete with the NACA platform. And I say we as a municipal level shelter can't. So any chance we get an opportunity to offer perspective and our expertise on it, it has a lot of value and I appreciate it. But the other piece of this is I don't want to at all discredit the work that the folks at Best Friends are doing. The volunteers that were there, the people that were teaching or giving these sessions, their intentions are genuine and they are truly passionate and they genuinely want to help animals and people that care about animals. It's the organization is filled with amazing, amazing people. It's just not for municipal animal shelters.
Appreciate that perspective. Yep. Bishop, anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, check out the website, keepithumane.com. This podcast was brought to you by the Keep It Humane Podcast Network. Did I do that fast enough?
That was actually pretty good. I'm impressed.
All right, cool. Don't forget to like, share, and rate the podcast. If you want to buy any of our merch, you can do that at keepithumane.com. Use discount code ACREPORT for 10% off of your next order. And we just, truthfully, like Bishop said, can't we all just get along? We just want to feel supported, truthfully. We want to feel appreciated for the hard work that we're doing. And we really don't want another burden in our way, and that's kind of what it feels like. So that's just the perspective. It took us an hour or 3 minutes to get through that, but that's truly what it is. So hopefully there's an opportunity for a conversation, and maybe there is an opportunity for a resolution in some aspects. So thank you both for taking the time out. It's my pleasure to have, you know, both of you here. Bishop, I don't say that enough, so thank you for being part of this podcast. Are you taking notes?
Me? No.
I thought you were writing down that I said thank you. And no. John, I'm sure you and I will be texting soon. So thanks again for your time. And as always on the Animal Control Report podcast, we like to say thanks for listening and keep it humane.